Hello, all. I'm going to start today's show a little differently, and I hope that's all right. We've been doing a whole lot to make this the best show we can give you, and I think it's important we share what we've added on what is coming in the future. We spend a lot of time curating information, researching platforms, and creating a show we think will be beneficial to you and your growing business. In saying that, we've joined Patreon, and hope you'll consider donating to help us bring you more content to help you support your company's growth. We've joined a few social media platforms to continue conversations after and in between our shows. You can now find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. We want to showcase our small businesses, so if you would like to be a curator for a day on Twitter or Instagram, let us know. We are also planning an event in May that will take place here in Northern Virginia. We plan to have speakers, a panel, networking, and much more. We will share additional details as we get closer to the date. And if you would like to contribute, sponsor, or would like to be a speaker or involved in some other way, please contact us at the email address, thebusinessbehindsmallbusiness@gmail.com. Lastly, thank you all for following us, listening to us, and watching us on YouTube. My jaw hit the floor when I saw how many followers we have. We are so grateful to you and hope you are finding great value in what we're providing for you. This is truly a labor of love. Tiffany spends a lot of her free time mixing and mastering, and she tries so hard to make me sound and to look better. I mean, you do a good job, but I mean, I can't imagine how much time it takes.
It's the quintessential, we're figuring it out as we go along. Totally. We're building that plane while we're flying it.
For sure. Great.
It's still flying.
Absolutely. And I write scripts for us for no other reason than I want to make sure that I don't leave out any details. And seeing as my brain sometimes works faster, or sorry, slower than my mouth. See?
Sure.
It's not hard to do. Okay, so that was a lot. And we still have a whole show to do. So, all right, we're going to be discussing today the services you should spend your business's money on and the services you can wait on. These are going to include apps, platforms, third parties, contractors, employees, you know, the whole schlemiel schlemackle. So without further ado, we're going to get started. Before we begin, please note our disclaimer. This is available in both our show notes and on our website and should be referred to before or after this podcast.
Speaking of legal, there's so many topics we can go over about what to hire, when to hire, what to buy, what not to buy, when to buy it. So, of course, we can't cover it all in one podcast, but we can cover some pretty hot topics there. So starting with legal, since we're talking about our own legal disclaimer, the one thing, and as much as I wanted to when I first started my business, was to skimp on was legal fees, right? Like, I mean, really, $600 to $1,000 an hour? Like, come on. Like, who can afford that, right? And I'm not going to go down the whole road of if and when that's worth it, right? But as a small business, like, that's an insane amount of money to pay a lawyer. Now, the great thing is there are actually really good small business-focused lawyers out there, thank goodness for them, who are a little bit more affordable, although still kind of expensive. Stings a little bit, but totally worth the price when you think about what they do for you and kind of the protection that they provide you should your legal documentation be drawn up properly. So small business lawyer attorneys typically go around, I would say, $250 to about $350 an hour, at least in our area.
Yeah,
probably
that's true.
It's cheaper everywhere else, unless you're in New York and LA. Right?
As everything is.
Exactly. And so, like, using like real licensed, went to school, bona fide attorneys to draw up like operating agreements, partnership agreements, if you need to get trademarks or any kind of IPs on your product or your brand, employment contracts, independent contractor contracts, and if I dare say it, also drafting your customer contracts. Now, I know it's tempting to go online and get one of those templates. Trust me, I have seen them all. I probably have tried them myself before, but I ended up paying a lawyer to go over everything and basically rewrite it anyways, because what is the point of having a contract out there that actually doesn't protect you from anything because you didn't have the right language in there in the first place?
Correct. Although I will say that in my case, I took one that I saw online that I really liked, and I took that to my attorney and said, this is basically what I want to have it say. I mean, he already knew what I wanted, but there was one in particular that was most like my business. So I think I paid less because he didn't have to try and figure out what I wanted to say in my contract.
Well, I think it is helpful to, you know, use a template if you don't know what you want, right? So have some kind of basis so you're not walking in, like you said, and say, hey, start over. Yes. I will admit that when I first started my business, I just kind of tapped in on really good friends who actually had lawyers draw up their contracts so I can just copy those to start with. Mm-hmm. But I did end up getting my own lawyer to look through my contract, put in the right language that I felt like was important after I understood how business is done in my industry and for my business. And I would say that's needed from day one. So just consider it as part of doing business. This is the one thing that you just don't want to be cheap about.
Absolutely.
Okay. So then the other thing I was thinking about, it was sales and marketing. So websites, right? Unfortunately, these days, I feel like you can't get away with having a business and no website. Like that's the number one thing people do is they Google you and they go, are you legit or not? Depending on one, if you have a website, and two, does that website even look credible? Now, the great thing is, although custom built websites are very expensive, there is a lot of software out there these days that can allow you to do like easy, like one pager, even landing pages, just as a temporary website until you get your feet wet and you're bringing in some money so you can actually pay for a better website. So I personally have used both Wix and Squarespace. I know there's WordPress out there, but I'm not tech savvy enough to figure out WordPress on my own. I tried. It just didn't make sense to me. But with Wix and Squarespace, I'm able to draw up like a website within like a day using one of their templates. And they typically run about $20 to $40 a month. So it's not the most extravagant cost, but I think it's well worthwhile, especially if you're trying to get customers and you want customers to find you on the internet and check you out and, you know, feel like that you're a trustworthy person to do business with.
Yes.
Now, on the same line of marketing, let's talk about content marketing. Now, do you really need this from day one? Probably. Do you need to pay for it? Probably not. Let's just be honest. You have a little bit of time on your hands when you're starting out. You don't really quite have customers yet. I would say that use that time wisely and put that into content marketing for yourself. I mean, these days I know there's AI assisted like writing and whatnot. Sure, that could help. But regardless, the thing is you need content marketing from the start. You may not need to pay for it from day one. Were you going to say something, Savannah?
Yeah, I was going to say that the advantage of doing your own content marketing as well is that when you can afford to have someone else do it for you, they will have your history, an historical knowledge of what you want, because if they don't know you and they don't have anything to go off of, you're probably going to end up wasting a lot of time trying to get them to understand what you want. So by you doing your own content marketing, they'll have a better understanding and know what kind of key focuses to follow.
What's the tone that you're going for, the brand, like what's your kind of unique sauce as far as what you're trying to put out there, right, for your content?
Absolutely.
And I completely agree with that. And I think also the great side effect is if you're starting out and you're doing your own content marketing, it kind of helps you work through some of those things you didn't really think about to be a little bit more clear about your message and what you do and what you want to be known for. And it's just a good exercise for any new business owners to go through.
Absolutely.
And honestly, like I said, in the beginning, when you don't have a lot of paying customers, your money is probably better spent on something that actually drives more immediate sales versus content marketing is really a slow build over time. It takes a lot of time for content marketing to kind of age, right? So in other words, like, yes, maybe you have a lot of great ideas, but can you really blast like 100 different articles and blogs out in one day and gain followers? Or do you need to spread that out over a year's time? And so by nature of it, it's just a slow build. So you have to start today because it's, you know, it's kind of like adding drops of water in a bucket, right? You got to start today in order for that bucket to fill up.
Well, I think it's actually called drip marketing. So you do it.
That's true. I totally forgot about that's the email campaign, right?
And you know what? And it's also really good for you to, your phone is in your hand. So it's that much easier for you to do your own content marketing until you can afford for somebody else to do it for you. So yeah, it's called drip marketing. That's funny.
Okay. So another thing in sales and marketing.
What'd you say?
Go on. Nothing. Go on.
Okay. So my light is off now.
See, you need to wave your hands around is what you need to do.
Not moving enough for the censored light to stay on, right? So, okay, whatever. We'll get to the reason why I'm in a different setting today a little bit. Thank you.
You're still very bright looking, so you're fine.
So, all right. So let's talk about more sales and marketing, right? Along the same lines, I think one thing you can wait on, which you will need eventually, is a CRM, also known as a customer relationship management tool, right? So according to Salesforce, what a CRM is that it provides a central place where businesses can store all their customer and prospect data. They can kind of track the customer interactions and then share this information with like a team. So if, you know, you're a small team, it's yourself, maybe with your marketing agency, or if you have an in-house kind of a marketing team or a sales team, you can share the system with them. And so I think it's super essential to have that because it is really hard to keep up with and also accumulate data on how your customers interacting or how prospects are interacting with all your different marketing collateral in a sense, right? So your website, your social media, you know, your referrals and whatnot, like all this is pretty much centralized in the CRM, which I think is really helpful. But to be quite honest, like until you really flush out your marketing strategy, you know, having a CRM just isn't helpful, right? It's a tool and a tool is as good as the strategy that it lives in. So until you're ready to figure out what your marketing strategy is, I think investing in a CRM upfront is just not, it's kind of overkill, right? You can do the same thing in Excel and keep up with it for a certain period of time.
And so
I think, Savannah, you used the same one I did. Oh, that's true. Airtable is a good one too. I keep forgetting about Airtable.
Yeah, you could use Airtable.
That's another good one to put in. So like, I think you use Active Campaigns, right? Or do you still use Active Campaigns?
I don't use Active Campaign any longer.
So I use Active Campaign.
I loved Active Campaign, except their automations never worked for me. So I moved on to something else, but I liked ActiveCampaign.
Okay. Yeah, I just remember when I was going through with my marketing agency, they kind of provided a few options. And ActiveCampaign wasn't like the best out there, but it was good enough. It was a low-cost option. It had just the right bells and whistles that really fit the budget and needs of a small business. And I think it ran about, I mean, I went for the lowest package because I just didn't have, like, I didn't need all of it. But it went anywhere from, like, $30 to $150 a month. I'm pretty sure I went with the $30 a month package, in a sense. And it just kind of helped manage all of our email campaigns, our drip campaigns, you know, segregate our clients, our prospects, and be able to have a more focused way of executing on our marketing strategy. I know Salesforce is, of course, the other brand that everybody knows about. I know they also have a small business package. I can't remember why we didn't go with them, or maybe they just didn't have it then back then. But the pricing is roughly about the same as ActiveCampaign. I'm with you. I ran into automation problems with ActiveCampaign. I think it's one thing they tried, but it wasn't really consistently well. But for the large part, it did well enough for us to keep it until my company sold, right? So, but it's something to look forward to in the future. Definitely not something you need on day one. And again, I think the trigger is you being really clear as to what your marketing strategy is before you start investing in a $30, $40 a month software.
Agreed.
So speaking of softwares, let's talk about your day-to-day stuff, right? So hands down, number one, I don't care what business you're in, I'm pretty sure you need some kind of Microsoft Office or Google Suites, right? Let's just put it out there. You need a WorkDoc software. You need some kind of spreadsheet software. You certainly need an email management software. Like, there's no getting around that. So just know that from day one, you probably got to pay for that. And I think subscription costs anywhere from like $6 to $20 a month. Mm-hmm. So the other thing I would highly recommend is buy an email domain. Actually, just buy a domain and set up your email with it, right?
Yes.
So I can't tell you the number of times I have seen people who are incredibly polished, incredibly well-spoken at a networking event, handing out cards that says janesmith@gmail.com. Right? Yep. Like, what a letdown.
Yep.
Right? If you're serious about your business, like, for heaven's sake, pay that $12 a year and get your domain. And then so you can have your email also also run under the same domain. Mm-hmm. So instead of janesmith@gmail.com, you can actually have janesmith@anactualabccompany.com, right?
Yep.
It's just a very low-hanging fruit that I see missed for whatever reason time and time again. And I would just say that that is definitely one of those areas that you don't need to save money on and you just need to spend it. And it's not even that big of a spend. Mm-hmm. And I have always purchased my own domain, set up my own email, synced it in with either Google Suites or Office 365. So like I said earlier, I'm not the world's most tech savvy person. So each of these softwares, they have step-by-step instructions on how to do this. You can totally do it yourself. It probably takes you an hour if you don't know how to do it the first time.
What were your thoughts on 365? I remember you used to use that, I guess you used to use that. What were your thoughts on that? Did you feel like it gave you a lot of options? Like it was nice and meaty?
So that's interesting you asked that. I'm still on 365, actually. Like it's a little bit like between Google and 365, it's like the difference between like an Apple and an Android. Right. You just got to get your head wrapped around how certain things work. But with like 365, now that they have the online apps and everything, it somewhat mirrors. But I feel like Google Suites is still much better with everything on the cloud. Like it just does it better with everything synced on the cloud. But I'm also more of a tactile person. So I love like the Microsoft products like Outlook and WordDoc and Excel. And I get a little bit turnaround with like what's the Google spreadsheet called? Is it just spreadsheets for Google? Google Sheets?
Yeah, Google Sheets.
I remember. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right. Google Sheets. Like I get turned around because I'm using like shortcut keys that I do on like Excel and I can't do it in Google Sheets, right? So it's like little things like that. It's also like between like a Mac and a PC. I had to learn like a different way of working it.
No, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. And you're right. It is the difference between a Mac and a PC or Apple and a Google or a Samsung product, I guess.
Yeah. So it's just, I think, preference at some point. How about you? Are you Google or are you Suite 365?
Yeah. I drink the entire pitcher of punch.
Google.
All Google, all the way. Yep. I'm going to get into that when I start sharing my opinions. But yeah, I love Google and I love how well it integrates with everything that I use. So is it that it integrates really well with all the things that I use, or did I choose the things that I use because of how well they integrate with Google? I don't know.
To integrate what came first?
So it wasn't that deep for me, but it just so happened that they all married really well. And it just turned into this really nice wheel with tons of cogs that all work together. So.
Well, I can't wait to hear that because I feel like between you and I, you are certainly much better at like figuring out the integrations of software and making that all flow together. And I think I just do it by necessity. So you put a lot more thought into it. So you're definitely much more like you definitely have a better flow than I do about that. So I can't wait to actually hear about that.
All right.
Which leads me to the next item, which I know you like this one, Zapier. I love Zapier. I really do.
Oh yeah.
I love Zapier. I discovered Zapier I think only about a year or so ago, right? But I mean, come on, like brilliant. Who thought like to solve that issue of, you know, I have five different software and none of them talks to each other. Well, let me put Zaps in it and now they all talk to each other. It's amazing. So for those of you out there who do not know, right? It's brilliant, right? So and the great part is there's a wonderful free version that you don't have to pay for. And it works pretty well with most of the popular softwares.
Yep.
Yeah. So I mean, for those of you who haven't heard of Zapier, it's essentially that, right? It's kind of a low code, no code way of essentially bridging two applications so that you can have you can actually have the two applications talk to each other or work together who seemingly don't have any built-in integration between the two. So like whether or not it is your Dropbox to your Excel, again, Dropbox, not a Microsoft product, but can talk to Excel, or Excel to ActiveCampaign, which we did that a lot, right? And then from ActiveCampaign to Excel to Microsoft Outlook in order to kind of automate like emails being shot out depending on what's happening in our CRM. So super, super cool tool that I would highly recommend everybody to check out. I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon either. I don't think there's anything too much out there that's quite like that.
Yeah, it's only getting bigger. Yes. It's only adding more and more to the things that they work with. Because when I first started using Zapier a few years ago, there were still a lot of things that they didn't connect to. Now I can't believe even some like random things that they connect to. It's really, really cool. I use them fully.
Yeah. And a cool thing is that if you go now, like you said, you get to add a benefit that's been used so much. So whatever you want done, most likely somebody had already asked for it and it's already done for you. So you basically just select the Zap and be able to do that action. So it just, it certainly simplifies everything as a small business owner, because you can't really afford at this level, or maybe you don't even need to afford at this level, some kind of enterprise software to bring everything under one house, right? Yes. But Zapier kind of gets you there and allows you to do that with different options and different softwares without having to pay the enterprise level pricing.
And yes, and I will add that you don't have to be big brained to understand it. And if it does get to a place, and I say that nicely, you know, you don't have to be like a coder, if you will, to know how to use it. However, you may come across an issue and you're like, I'm sorry, I don't know. This is above my pay grade. Their help is fantastic. Granted, it's not in real time. Yes. They will be emailing you back and forth, but they do a really good job of helping you figure out why a Zap isn't working and what to do. So I will say that I've come across a couple of issues when I was setting some of my Zaps up, and they were so good at helping me figure out what the issue was and then fixing it.
Well, they're definitely one of those very customer-centric companies. So you're very right, their support is amazingly well. So it makes the whole thing less intimidating.
For sure. Right.
Okay, so along the same lines as just day-to-day stuff, one of the things is office space. Now, in this day and age, I really don't think you need an actual physical office space to have a company. I mean, the pandemic really helped that out. Even before, there was a lot of companies that were fully remote. Savannah company has always been fully remote, has always been able to operate well, fully remote. All the people are remote workforce. So you don't really need an office space. But I will say, I do like having a business address outside of my home, right?
Yeah, there's a great advantage
so,
to that.
I mean, there's a lot of ways. Right. And so there's a lot of ways for you to get that. You don't necessarily have to sync up with a shared office space, like a WeWorks or Intelligent Office or Metro Office or Office Evolution, which is the ones we have around here. I'm sure other people have, like Regis and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Like you don't have to sync up with an office space to do that. You can always do a PO box, or there's other services that allows you to just have a business address and that's it. And it's certainly a cheaper cost. But personally for me, because I've always been in a service-based kind of business, I enjoy having the option to have a shared office space that I can rent as I need. So maybe I don't want to meet at coffee houses all the time, or maybe I want to set up some kind of presentation and I need a nice conference room to do it. Having that rent as you need it option is really great just to kind of keep up with your professional image without having to pay a high, consistent rent prices, right? Now, that being said, that's where I'm sitting at today is a shared office space, because my home office had a little voluntary rearrangement that left everything out in the open and not conducive to video podcasting like this. So quickly I zipped over and I was like, I need to set up somewhere in the office so I can actually do this podcast. And, you know, within, I was 15 minutes late, but within the 15 minutes I got here. The only problem I have is they have sensor lights, apparently, and I'm not moving enough for the lights to come on.
They don't want to cooperate with you. So that's the only thing, is the office doesn't seem to want to give you the lighting you deserve. So
that's okay. That's okay. Minor things you have to pay. You have to, you know, deal with. That's okay. But it beats you. Everybody here looking straight into my very messy home office right now.
There are, you know, the pros and cons. I will also add to that look into your local county or city and see if maybe they offer, if they offer spaces. Like we've got the, we've got the MEC, which is the Mason Enterprise Center. And we have the CBP, which I'm going to talk a little bit more about, the Community Business Partnership. And you can pay for a virtual office where you get an address and you get to use the space for X amount of time. Like you don't get your own office there, but if you want to do meetings there, you can do that kind of thing. Also, if you are a food oriented business, see if there is like a shared kitchen. There's a few shared kitchens in our area.
We have that in DC here.
Yeah. So we have a few of those shared kitchens where you can use industrial nice stuff. And basically it's a shared space for those in the food industry. So if you are an up and coming baker or a caterer, anything
food
like
truck
that
business.
Yeah. Food truck or a food truck business or anything like that. Look and see if maybe there is a food share, and they're pretty inexpensive. I feel like at the time when, my cousin is an amazing, cake, designer and, baker. And she, I want to say it was like $500, $500 a month or something like that, which paid itself in like two cakes or three cakes because she just makes these elaborate, beautiful cakes. And then also if you are some gyms will allow you to, if you are in, you know, I'm just speaking to some other different services, industries that you might be in, where they might allow you to rent out space for an hour to train if that's, you know, what your business is in. There are some local businesses also. If you make things that you sell on a retail level, but you can't afford to have your own retail space, I know that in our area, because I work with some of those types of people, they will allow you to rent a certain section of their store to display your items. And we happen to have the, I think it's called the workhouse. It's a former prison in Lorton, and it's historical. It's actually quite lovely. And it's, you can rent a space, a small space. We also have Torpedo in Alexandria, Torpedo Factory, right, where you can rent a small space for your items, at least until you can afford to get a brick and mortar of your own. So look into the options that you might have in your local area for your industry, because there might be something available to you, small, but, you know, still it's something.
Well, sometimes it just helps to be out of your house. And sometimes... Yeah. And sometimes like in your industry too, like you were saying with the food and the kitchen, the commercial grade kitchen, like a lot of that has to do also with like county regulations. Like if you have a certain type of business, you can't be making this food at home in your home kitchen. And these places are already set up and up to code, and they have like the large walk-in refrigerators and everything to make sure that you can actually abide by the regulation. So it's, I do think that, like you said, depending on industry you are, how urgent it is, but I do think it is worthwhile to invest in that kind of services up front and get yourself set up right.
And okay, sorry, not to cut you off, but you might also find yourself networking with someone. Like say if the person next to you is looking for somebody to make sweets and you make sweets, but they make the savories and they need somebody to make the sweets, or you need somebody to make the savories, you know, it might be a good opportunity to create new business as well. Okay. Now I'll be quiet.
Very nice. I only have one last thing to say, which is when or not, or whether or not, or when or why, or you know, if you should spend money on support for yourself as the business owner. So I'm thinking more of like coaching services, maybe joining accelerators, joining incubators, which sometimes comes with the office space. So if you were thinking right. about that, mm-hmm. but really yeah. just support for the business owner's growth, right? In addition to the business itself. And personally, I think this kind of straddles between nice to have and need to have.
Yes, I agree.
I feel like it really comes down to, as a business owner, how much business experience you personally have, how well surrounded are you with other people that you know who can actually advise you on business issues or business growth or strategy, and how confident you feel in your own business skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't have a lot of experience, you come from a family that's not very entrepreneur, you don't have friends who are very entrepreneur, and if you yourself just kind of have a low confidence in your own abilities to be able to create, run, and grow a business, then I would mm-hmm. say that this investment is something you want to do up front, because it'll set you down the right path, and it'll actually yeah. shorten the time span between when you start and when you're mm-hmm. going to start gaining success and momentum in your business. And time is everything, right? Otherwise, you mm-hmm. can spend years just kind of, you know, spinning yourself in circles. Yeah. So, you know, I think in that case, invest in a coach, invest in some kind of membership to an accelerator, or, you know, join an incubator as soon as you can. Because in all honesty, there are some underlying foundational, basic, age-old how-tos and formulas to running a business. This hasn't changed ever for years. So you don't need to go around trying to reinvent that wheel. It has already been invented for you. You just need to absorb the knowledge to be able to figure out how to use it yourself. So mm-hmm. no need to kind of, you know, turn yourself on that one.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing I want to say about this is you were mentioning, what was it? MEC, CBP, which is the Community mm-hmm. Business Partnership around here, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. these are also great organizations in addition to SBA, your local EDA, which is Economics Development Association,
yep.
and your SCORE. These are great like organizations for you to go to find help, right? To find mentors, mm-hmm. to find even just informational help on how to do certain things, right? But one mm-hmm. of the key things they have is they do have volunteers that, you know, will provide their time as business mentors.
Yep.
And maybe you yourself yep. can find free business mentors, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I will say, you get what you pay for, first of
for
all.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
And you focus on what you pay for.
Yes.
So you want the attention and the focus that you need to achieve your goals, hopefully sooner rather than later, because, you know, time is money. mm-hmm. But what you're negotiating when you go for free is the time, the attention, and the focus that you'll be getting. So you got to ask yourself, are you willing to give that up or negotiate that? Or would you rather just pay and get exactly what you need now?
Right.
So that's a question I feel like everybody has to ask themselves and kind of figure it out for themselves when mm-hmm. is the time they want to pay for this.
I think it's a to what end? Like what end result are you looking for? Are you looking for someone to give you just a little bit of information? Is it a fringe thing that you're looking for? Because you're right. It is a matter of what is it I'm hoping to get out of this? And you do get what you pay for. Not to say that these are not valuable. They're very valuable mm-hmm. resources that oftentimes are provided by your city, your county, sometimes the state. But you should definitely do your own homework as well, and know that if you are paying for someone like a business coach or something like that, their focus is going to be 100% on you, as opposed to being someone who is sharing their perspective with you every now and then. And then the other thing that I wanted to add to what you were saying is don't discount what your college or the college that you went to might offer for you as well. So because I'm right next to George Mason, I'm aware of what George Mason University offers. And they have a lot of programs and special offerings, I guess, for their alumni. And one of the big things that they do is in the tech sector. And so if you have something that is technology-based, SaaS, anything that is in that vicinity, plus they have a relationship with Amazon because of the Amazon world headquarters, or rather headquarters that is here in Arlington.
Yeah.
And I believe Virginia Tech has the same programs. And they offer,
I think, have also a satellite office here.
Yeah. So yes, yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of opportunities if you went to either one of those schools, or maybe you have someone mm-hmm. in your family that went to one of those schools that you could take advantage of, unless your school has some program that they can offer to you to help you with your business. So,
yeah. And these are all, like, you know, certainly, like, these are all the options you do have, right? And I think they fall into mm-hmm. the free category because they're really here to help promote entrepreneurship. And they're valuable. They're very, mm-hmm. very good, right? Mm-hmm. I think the question comes is just if you're getting exactly what you need, and if you find that you're not getting exactly what you need when you need it, you know, mm-hmm. I would say strongly consider a paid option, because, I, like I said, you much rather want to shorten the runway to when you're going to hit momentum and where you're going to start seeing some success in your business.
Yep, I agree. So one of the most important platforms you and your team will need is a place to communicate. And I concur. Mm-hmm. Google Workspace is fantastic. And it has
cannot
a
believe you're not promoting Microsoft Teams.
I know. Who knew? I told you. I make the punch and I drink it out of the pitcher. Like, I am that much of a Google fanatic. Because I've been using Google for so many years, and it's only gotten better. And it's made my life that much easier, which is why I am so, like, rah-rah Google. Even though they're so big brother, it's kind of creepy, but whatever. Anyway, it has a lot of great plugins for any kind of business that you have. If you invest in anything at all and can only afford one big spend, let it be this. You will be amazed by how many different platforms integrate with Workspace and vice versa. So kind of like what I was saying is it that Google just happened to integrate really well with the platforms that I was using, or did I choose these platforms because they integrated really well with Google? I can't say, because there has yet to be a platform that I have come across, used even for a short period of time, that didn't integrate really well with Google. Everyone knows how to use it as well. So if you grow a team, if you happen to be a team like mine, which is remote, you spend less time trying to train someone to use it. Or if you guys are even together, it doesn't matter. Everyone knows how to use Google.
What is the cost for Workspace? I feel like it's, what is it, $12, $15, maybe $20 a month? I can't remember what it is.
It's a per person. It's a per person.
Oh, it's a thing. License, per person license. Got it.
Yep. And they do run specials. So I had a special that was like a 3-year long special where it was $12 per person. But I paid for the bigger package, which I want to say after my 3 years, it goes up to $17 per person.
Okay.
But I'm using like all of the things. So you don't necessarily need all of the things. So just know that it likely would be $10. Yeah. I think
it's roughly around the same for Office 365 per person. It's about the same. Yeah. I think they're all running about the same pricing. So it does add up, right? If you do have people on your team that you want to be part of your license. So certainly something to think about. But again, I think we're kind of recommending that this is too important for you not to spend on.
For sure.
Early like on, said, too.
If there's one big spend, and it's not really even that big of a spend, but these are the things that we think you should be spending your money on. And a Workspace is definitely one of them. So, and one of the free things that Google offers is a website. So you can either use this as an intranet, or you could use it as a public facing website until you're able to afford something a little loftier. You can also use Google's Boomerang model to schedule emails. Ooh, I love it. Because
I love, you know, Boomerang in a service-based industry. If nobody has ever heard of that, go check it out. Boomerang, right? Mm-hmm. I love it when it was free.
I know. And it was free for a long, long time.
They were starting out. Nobody knew who they were. There was this nifty little software. And it worked with Microsoft as well. So we always use Microsoft. And there's
awesome.
An add-in and stuff you can use. Now, at first it wasn't quite as functional as the Google one, but it became mm-hmm. that way. And then of course they started charging us. I'm like, dang it, it was free for so long. But it was so darn good that I was like, I'm going to pay for it because I could not have this in our lives right now. All my staff used it. Like the ability, like you never know how much your life changes when you have the ability to schedule emails.
I know. Yep. Because there have been a few times when we have actually, that's one of the things that we do when we talk to a client and we're like, oh, you know, we'll get back. We're going to check in on you in a week, or we're going to check in on you in about 2 weeks. We'll just schedule that email right then and there. So we don't forget about it, because you will forget about it. And it's great for client retention.
Oh, and they also have reminders. So if you send out an email and the person doesn't get back to you, right, you can set like 3-day reminders. And the third day, you'll get a reminder from Boomerang saying, hey, so-and-so hasn't replied yet, which for us in our service-based industry, being that follow-up with our very busy business owners is such key and so helpful. They totally appreciate it, but it's impossible for one person to keep up with what you need to follow up with. So that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can connect Boomerang to Zapier. And my favorite now, it's through Boomerang. It's called Bookable. It's the calendar scheduler.
Oh, that must be new. Okay.
It's so cool. I love it. I used to pay for Calendly, and no offense, no, not knocking it. I've tried a couple of others as well. In my opinion, Bookable is hands down the best. I can add myself and anyone else on my team's calendar to one calendar so that a client can choose a time that's best for them. So what I mean is when we meet with a client, especially a brand new one, it's usually myself, the manager, and the service provider. And instead of us saying, does this time work for you? Does this time work for you?
Oh, yeah.
The calendar will embed itself into the email, and it will automatically show when the three of us coincidingly have free time. And it will say choose on the calendar where all three of us happen to be free. And all the client gets is, here are the times that we are available. Please choose a time.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's really cool.
It is. And because Google and Zoom are related now, I don't know what their relationship is, but you can you can automatically
recording each other probably.
I don't know.
Maybe dating, casual dating.
Listen, I eat the Zoom cookies and I drink the Google punch. I am all about it. I got nothing to hide except for my grace. The thing is that when you do that, if you say that you want these to be a Zoom meeting, it will automatically create that in your calendar, and it's awesome, absolutely awesome. And people are usually pretty impressed by it. It looks so professional. So I can put that calendar in any way that I want, or I can do it like the way you would with Calendly, where you can say a 30-minute exploratory times. Or a catch-up or whatever kind of way that the client wants to meet with you. So you can choose whatever kind of meeting you want it to be. Google is constantly adding and updating their apps to monopolize the market. Maybe not, but whatever. I'm afraid to say that I am all here for it. I keep an app to keep notes, and Keep is an app to keep notes and remind you on important tasks. Google Chat is what I use to communicate with my team. You don't know how many times I have searched through a chat to find something and it highlights it for me. I love it. I'm sure there are other things that do it too, but if you're already on the Google Workspace, why not utilize what you're being given? I use the Docs, I use the Sheets, I use the Drive. I mean, the list just keeps going. Speaking of lists, I recently discovered Notion.
I feel like if I could hand you a cup of Kool-Aid, Google Kool-Aid, it would be very appropriate. If I could hand it to you through the screen.
Hand me the straw. Drinking it up. No ice needed. I use Notion, and I love it so much. Notion is a wonderful place for all things to live, and it's a great way to keep track of projects, clients, and so much more. I created a space for my team that has all of our clients, a team directory, standards of procedure. I have the procedures manual separated from each, and then I have all of the pages separated. It has our how-tos, our company news. There's a directory. And I have invited everyone in my company in as a guest so that I don't have to pay for them. It's a place for them it's basically a place for them to get all of the things that they would get if we were all in one office anyway. It's fairly inexpensive and it's a great tool that will grow with you and your business. Also, if you have inventory, you can keep track of your inventory here and you can set up reminders to set up orders as well. Notion has so many different bells and whistles, and their free version has a whole lot to offer, which means you don't have to pay for it until you really truly need to. So when you start your company, you need to also have a place to keep track of your money. I recommend QuickBooks and I recommend nothing else. Yes, there are a lot of other options out there and I hear about them all the time. There's a lot of free ones out there. I don't argue it. However, when you are ready to move into QuickBooks, which you will likely do, your information is going to be a little skewed coming from a different platform. And by God, please do not keep your company's finances in an Excel spreadsheet.
So to that point, right? For those of you who aren't willing to commit to QuickBooks, I'll tell you right now, I'm not using QuickBooks. Only because like my stuff is not that complicated. And I know enough about this to be like, my stuff is, so I'm allowed to use Excel.
But you're different.
So that's a little different, but I don't use Excel. But I will tell you that I use Wave, which you probably heard of as one of those free ones. And they're pretty nifty. Now, they're not as sleek as QuickBooks. They're, you know, even their invoicing isn't quite as pretty. So if you do have a very customer-facing branding, you know, important type of like business, I would say obviously go with something like QuickBooks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would choose QuickBooks over the other ones for sure. But for now, like as a one-person, one-on-one consulting, you know, gig that I have going on right now, like Wave is just right for the $0 that I pay for it.
I will say though that when you move from Wave to QuickBooks, it's not that hard.
Because that's good to know. I never thought about that.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm going to retract what I said. I recommend QuickBooks if your intention is to hire in. Let's say if you start your company by yourself, but your intention is to start adding people pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go with Wave. I would go with Wave if you are a singular consultant, if you are, you know, like
very
a business
freelancer-ish.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wave is good for that. And if you ever were to grow to a place where you needed something to support more complexity, Wave does transfer information over to QuickBooks pretty easily. It's not perfect, but it's a lot better than some other programs or platforms that we've had to transfer information over from. Yes, I will say that QuickBooks is good if you're going to have other people working for you. Wave is really good if it's just going to be you. Okay, so speaking about people.
Yeah, one person. That's what I'm saying. Like with that caveat, one person. But if you're going to have an actual like operations with the team, employees, if you want to keep time and all that stuff, like QuickBooks, I think hands down has the most like app integrations possible you can think of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They literally have one for everything.
Speak to your bookkeeper or your CPA. Maybe they have an accountant's account with QuickBooks and could potentially offer you a discount through their own rates. I want to say QuickBooks gives accountants 35% off or something like that. Yes, of course, you could get that 50% off subscription for 3 months, but it goes right back up to the regular retail rate and you cannot take your already existing QuickBooks subscription and transfer it over to an accountant's discount. So something to consider.
It's a love-hate relationship with me and QuickBooks Online.
I don't disagree.
I'm sure
with
you have the same. Exactly.
I do not disagree with you. It's not my favorite, but it is the most understandable by my clients. I do have others that I prefer, but they're not as understandable to the client. And considering the kind of clientele I work with, like to have a good view of their finances because they're all in growth mode. Yeah. It's the tool that we have. But it's also not terrible. It's not terrible, but it's not my absolute favorite. Okay, so I'm going to get into the people now. Who do you need and why? Well, you know, money rules the world, and that's my number one concern always, in saying that you should hire a bookkeeper and a CPA. You don't really need an accountant just yet, probably. I'd imagine when you are starting this business, it's not quite that complex yet. However, if your company is going to be multi-layered from the beginning and complex, then yeah, I would say hire an accountant as well. But I think you should be fine starting off with a bookkeeper and a CPA. Or maybe the bookkeeping company that you are hiring has an accountant there. That's even better. So I'm saying that you should spend your money on a good bookkeeping firm, not a bookkeeper. I'm not saying this because of my own company. I'm saying this because of my own experience. You want a firm that can, that will have insurance to cover liabilities. They will vet the best bookkeepers for the job because, you know, they're a firm and they have a reputation to uphold. So they're going to be holding their bookkeepers accountable. They will likely have quality measures to ensure your books are clean, and they can afford to take on a small client that will likely grow to be a larger, more complex client. A bookkeeper on their own can do and offer none of those things. Yes, they can do books, but they can't offer you any of that other, all of the other things that you are going to need. Plus, with a firm, your CPA will have less to do to clean up, and you'll save money there. And just investing in a firm also will give you the opportunity to have conversations about how to grow, depending on what kind of firm you hire. So definitely the second thing I'd say, that if you must pay for a good bookkeeping company.
So really quickly though, how are you defining company?
A firm. So a company that is, okay, so there's mine, right? But my company does growth management. We don't just do bookkeeping. So it would be a little different than mine. No. I would say a company that is either a brick and mortar, or maybe what they offer is remote or mostly remote, but a company that has there's the owner, and then they have senior accountants, maybe they have or senior bookkeepers, junior bookkeepers. They should have somebody who mediates all of that. You know, take a look at their website and see how many people are in the company.
Okay. So you're thinking about like a firm that has like different roles so that a company can actually grow with them, right? Because you're having all these different layers of people with varying experiences that you're probably going to need along the road. And it allows you to stay with them longer. So you don't want to change out, because I mean, historical knowledge does count for something. It's really hard when you change out people. And, you know, again, there are nuances to your business you have to keep repeating yourself for. The other thing I would say is, it's funny you brought up a good point, it's just the liability of it all, right? Mm-hmm. So there are very small LLCs that provide bookkeeping work out there. And you're right, they may just focus just on bookkeeping. And if for whatever reason that's the type you're looking for, then I would say go along the lines of what Savannah was saying, is they should be incorporated of some kind, LLC, and they should have insurance. Right. So they should have some kind of professional insurance, right? Errors and omission insurance. And that's also things that, I mean, I would say would define the difference between just a freelance bookkeeper who's like a sole proprietor versus an actual incorporated company, which is what I think you're advising that our listeners should go for, is the ones that are, you know, fully like supported by all of the things a business should be, insurance wise, liability wise, and whatnot.
And there are some CPA firms that will also have a bookkeeping department.
Yes.
So start with your own CPA and ask them if they offer it. And if they don't offer it, I'm sure they have someone that they could recommend to you. But that would be where I would start.
Got it.
Next, I would go with hiring an admin or an intern, probably an intern before an admin, but you know, go with your gut, if you will. Give them small jobs that are clogging your day that don't require a lot of training. And there are so many minuscule, ancillary, tedious jobs that need to be done on a daily basis, but don't need to be done by you. This is going to leave you with more time to dedicate to and focus on your more complex tasks. If you live near a college, even better. You can hire out or just, you know, look around or even put it on. I'm sure if you're on Facebook, there are Facebook groups within your city, your county, your area, your neighborhood. You could put it out there. I don't recommend paying less than $15 an hour anywhere in the country. So just keep that in mind. Would you agree? I just don't feel like less than $15, you're going to get a very qualified person. And I feel like 15 is a fair rate.
Well, you could 15 is even entry level, right? Like,
yeah.
I feel like when you're hiring an intern, especially at the level of $15, it's entry level, meaning that they will do what you say.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. They will do what you say. You know, they're not going to know what to do until you actually give them the guidance and also the list of what to do. It's a lot of directing on your end, but that's what you get for $15, right? An hour.
Yeah.
So
I kind of feel like it's like a babysitter. Like, you know that there's just a rate you should not go below. Same thing. Just keep it in mind. I personally invested in a day sitter to watch my baby while I worked, because as you all know, I got pregnant soon after starting my company. And so for the first 3 years of his life until he could go into preschool, for the first 3 years of his life, I had a day sitter who came over. I want to say she came over 3 or 4 times a day. Three or four times a week, and watched him. And it was great money invested on my part. It was a huge help for me. So if you're in the same boat, look to your neighborhood. And again, I don't recommend paying less than $15 an hour. But you know, you decide what it is that you feel it's worth in your area. It's going to help you so much in return. Now I'm going to go back to Google. I do think that as you set up platforms, apps, and all of the things, that you should also start creating Word documents, or Google documents, and record those processes. No matter how small it is. That's likely one of my bigger regrets in not having written processes until much later in the life of my company. They don't have to be perfect, because they are going to change as your company changes and as you add new people, and you can then share those documents as well. Utilize the free Google plugins as much as you can. When your company becomes big enough to afford an HR, you'll have a sturdy foundation for them to work with. Lastly, take advantage of your local networking groups, but be very, very selective on which ones you go to. If your company is a B2C, meaning business to client, you're better off creating opportunities for your customers to buy from you. If your company is a B2B, meaning business to business, then join an event or two that costs money, because the more serious businesses are going to be there. It's heavy on the kind of businesses your business does business with. So for me, that would be CPAs, M&As, CFOs, and the like. Avoid those catch-all networking groups. Most of the people there don't really know what networking is, and it's going to be a huge waste of time, because it's kind of like the difference between shooting fish in a barrel and shooting fish in an ocean. So,
well, I think if you're starting out and you have never, this is your first business, you don't, like, you're really new to everything, I think those general groups are great for you to go and practice your own pitch and practice your own sales, like, just to, you know, get your feet wet and actually get some live feedback from people you're talking to. But like Savannah, like you're saying, like, at some point, if you're really going to use these networking events as a marketing and sales tool, then it is much more beneficial to go to events that are already exclusive to the people that you want to speak with. And that typically comes with some kind of paid entry fee, right? That's kind of your registration fee. But it is worthwhile, because you'll be spending your time with people you should be spending your time with, versus trying to, you know, part the seas with a whole bunch of people who you probably aren't going to be able to help your business, and vice versa. You probably won't be able to give them value either.
Okay, so in saying that, I want to kind of segue into our point counterpoint, and we might not counterpoint. We might be on the same page with this.
Yeah, creep to everything.
I know. It sucks that we can't really, because we're always like, yeah, you're right. Right. So we can never like really truly counterpoint one another because we always convince each other to align. Anyway, so I wonder what your thoughts are on joining a local chamber when you first start your company, what value you think it may bring, if any at all, or because I feel like in this area, especially, people tend to start a business, join the chamber, or start a business and join one of those larger national networking groups that, and then sometimes they just stay there, but you're like, why are you still here after 15 years? If you're complaining about not getting any work, and they're like, I kind of like doing this. So, you know, I learned very quickly what would work and would not work for me. I'm not going to say very quickly. It wasn't very quickly. It was very slowly. It was very slowly. So for our listeners who are and watchers, for them, when they're just starting out their company, whether it be B2C, B2B, remote, or brick and mortar, what are your opinions on joining a group?
Yeah.
Right out the gate.
Yeah. Are we talking about chambers specifically or just any kind of networking group?
Let's talk about chambers and let's talk about any kind of networking group.
So the interesting thing about chambers is, so I'm learning, is not all chambers are built the same, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of it's driven by, because chambers are local, right? It's a local county or a local city that you have a chamber in, or it's like grouped together by some, like I know we have like the Asian American Chamber here. I think we have the Black Chamber here too. Like, you know, there's also another way to group chambers. But none of them are built the same. There is no one size fit all with how chambers are run. And so that means you also get a lot of different chambers. It's like you have a lot of different businesses.
Yeah.
So I find that it is helpful that, you know, even if it is local to you, you may want to join a chamber that is more centric to your industry. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you are, maybe you're a brick and mortar business, maybe you're a retail business, right? And the area you're in is also full of boutique brick and mortar businesses, then I would say that chamber is probably a pretty good chamber for you to join because one, you know, you're among people who understand what your business is. You're among people who are part of the city that, you know, oftentimes chambers are, oftentimes chambers influence policy for your area. So, you know that you're with the right people who are looking out for your business and really gets you and can help you actually grow. So I wouldn't say like, you know, if you're a brick and mortar business like that, sure, you join a chamber that's largely full of professional service people or IT, tech forward innovators in a sense, because it's just, you know, it's like water and oil, right? It doesn't, there's not much you can do for each other. For the most part, if you are in a business consumer type of business, I would say that most chambers you can probably do pretty well in, depending on what you're selling. But for the most part, I feel like business consumer, you can kind of go anywhere. I think if you're a business to business, you have to be really selective because otherwise you will end up wasting time. And then for the larger general networking groups, oh man, I don't know. Depends on what day you ask me, I feel like. Again, it depends on the makeup and the feel and who's in it, and who's in the leadership and how they're driving the actual organization, right? Like sometimes if you don't agree with their philosophy, don't join them. You know, if they only want to meet at 7 o'clock in the morning and you do not want to wake up at 7, don't join them.
Yeah, but so many of them, if not all of them, only allow you to show up or rather be a guest twice. How can you really know what a group is going to be like if you only get
then
to
don't
visit?
Like if you're not feeling it and you don't feel like it's worth the investment, don't join it. I don't know. I just think that it's such a hit or miss. I feel like I still haven't figured out the formula of being able to tell about our group from a couple meetings. And honestly, I feel like they all kind of run with the same template. So I don't really know how that actually differs or it comes with different results when you're all running with the same template. So I don't know. I guess I'm maybe a little bit of a loner at heart, possibly, or I just like to create my own group of people. But that's what I'm saying. Like, oh, depends on what day you ask me.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is a good segue to the raw truth. This is our new segment. And I promise.
Are you going to counterpoint me on that at all? Or no, we agree on that one too.
Perhaps, perhaps, but we do.
Okay. No, let's segue to the raw truth. Let's see. Here's yours first. I want to hear this now.
Okay. We're segueing to the raw truth, right? Or do you want to hear what my thoughts are? Because my thoughts are pretty much the same as yours. The raw truth.
Oh, I thought that the raw truth was like, we're about to hear your point as well as your experience.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll backpedal and I will give you what my, cause I pretty much agree with you. I feel like if there is a chamber that's even, you know, two counties away that fits you and your company better, I'd say join that. Is it a requirement to the success of your business? Absolutely not. Do you need to join a networking group for the success of your business? Absolutely not. Don't feel like you need to join anything. There are a lot of people who subscribe to the belief that you have to join something in order for your company to do well. I can tell you from my own experience that I didn't have to join anything really for the success of my company. But what I did do was I spent a lot of time going to different networking events. Now, our segment, The Raw Truth, is where I will talk a little bit about what I do regret about those networking events. What I did learn is that the ones that, and why I mentioned you should only go to the ones that you pay for, is because those people that pay for it, may it be, you know, sometimes they're $35, $50, $60. It's not generally more than that, at least not in this area, is that you're going to find people who are more serious about their business. Those free events are going to have every straggler there. And not that those aren't important as well. Maybe it's a good place for you to practice your 30-second pitch. Maybe it's a good place for you to get used to hobnobbing, if you will. But it's not going to be the place where you're going to find the best clientele that will propel your company into the stratosphere. It's not going to happen. So I have a love-hate relationship with networking groups myself. And it's kind of funny that I should say that, considering I once, you know, ran and owned a networking organization and I ran networking groups and I've done all of those things. But looking back on it, I don't know that they hold the weight that organic marketing holds, whether or not you are a service-based in a service-based industry. So I guess I'm kind of counterpoint and I'm kind of point with you.
Well, as you know, my needle, I guess my viewpoint of like, I mean, my networking organization viewpoint, I don't think has changed very much. I haven't seen any kind of networking groups that I feel like has really like, well, okay, no, I take that back. I suppose there has been a couple that has been different, right? But then they're not, they don't really build themselves as a networking group. Right. Yeah. They're usually more like membership based and like, you know, those kind of circles, which are very different than pure networking groups. So my love-hate relationship is really with networking groups versus like the membership, you know, it's membership types of like organizations and such. But then, of course, my meter about chambers have changed only recently. But I mean, I've been through quite a few chambers and, you know, it depends on the fit. Typically, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of, the pandemic also, I think the pandemic also just obliterated really bad chambers, to be quite honest.
Totally. Yes, absolutely. It totally right. changed the, so, like, it totally changed the conversation of how they even get members.
Yeah. So like good chambers are very protective of their membership. They, mm-hmm. you know, the idea is chambers are supposed to create business opportunities, right? So that's why they create events and they create networking, like basically opportunities for you to be able to meet with people. And if the chamber is really active, then they also themselves look out for you and help you make connections with other members that you may not meet, because not every member shows up to every single event, but they're creating those opportunities for you. So that's what I feel like you should expect from chambers. And then, of course, there's the policy side of things too, right? So if they are clued in with like their city councils and whatnot, then they also influence policy, which is also really good for the small business in the area. And I think that makes up a really active chamber and a really good one. Now, just the problem is not all chambers are like that, right? Just like not every business is a good business. It just happens. So I think if you're going to spend your money, then you should find a chamber that fits you. Like you said, even if it is two towns away, right? If it's exactly what you need, has the people that you want to interact with, then totally go for that one.
Well, and I will say that one of the benefits of the chamber is your access to a lot of other different types of companies or businesses that you may be in need of. And you could talk to them about a barter system if it's something you need but you can't afford. The difference between the need and the want. And also, they a lot of times will offer special rates for loans. So, you know, you can, and insurance, there's also that. Lot of times chambers will have insurance benefits.
Just the group benefits.
So you could take advantage of those. I'm not knocking the chamber. I'm not knocking networking groups. I think that you should definitely do your homework on the members and whether or not it's going to be worth your time. And always ask yourself, what is it that I want out of this? Is it that I want to have relationships with other people? Am I going to use this as a way to create a network? Or am I looking to get more business out of this? So that's what you should be asking yourself.
Yeah. And it's all about hanging out with the right people too, right? And that's I think all of this comes down to. You want to hang around the right people and you want to be, and a lot of times being active in chambers, networking events, all this really just gives you exposure to the right people. It creates chances and opportunities for you to work together. So you get to know each other more than just surface level, right?
Yes.
And, you know, connections and relationship, that's everything in business. Like, I don't care how big a size you are, you know that. A lot of times your business growth is dependent on relationships. And so I think this is what all these organizations are supposed to be doing and creating the opportunities for. You just need to pick and choose what's a fit for you. And then that kind of does lead me to my truth, which was I waited a little too long to join a business accelerator, right? So I was one of those kids who didn't have a lot of entrepreneur experience, didn't have a lot of people around me to ask questions about, didn't have a lot of friends who did it, right? And I didn't have that much confidence in my own skill sets because I didn't really know anything outside of just being a good accountant and not even accounting for small business. Like, heavens, I bought my first copy of QuickBooks on day one when I set up my business. And I was like, Googling, how do you use QuickBooks? Listening to all the introductory courses, right? Yep. So I waited, what, a good 5 or 6 years into the business before I did. Now, I will say that I think that if you're somebody like me, join one early would be great because accelerators usually come with educational material, right? It comes with educational classes. It's there to kind of help level up your knowledge as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, which would have been really helpful in the beginning. Now, by the time I joined the group, I mean, the one good thing is, you know, I'm sitting in these kind of quote unquote classes and kind of like, well, I'm glad I kind of figured it out and didn't screw it up. I guess this is confirmation I was doing it right. Right. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't have to go reinvent the wheel myself. I could have sat in one of those classes like 3 or 4 years ago and just learned it instead of, you know, pounding my head against the wall, trying to like figure out something, thinking that I've discovered it for the first time. And it hasn't been discovered for the first time. It's been there forever. So that's one of the things. But I did also enjoy, I mean, I appreciated the educational stuff, but I also enjoyed the just seemingly being around other business owners, other founders like myself, and just the conversations and just having that camaraderie. I thought that was really, really good. And that's what I joined for. I kind of figured like, because the way I built my business, I was a little bit scaling, a little bit accelerating, a little fast. I mean, to my own, like, you know, detriment too, because I'm impatient. Not that I'm saying I recommend the speed to anybody. So, like, the educational information was a nice to have, but the people that was in the group, I think that was really helpful. And I wish I didn't wait that long before I actually invested in the money to actually join one of those groups.
Yeah. So my raw truth is that I wasted a lot of time on the wrong networking groups. I went to a lot of free events. I went to a lot of happy hours. And so little actually came out of those. I was averaging 4 daytime and 4 nighttime a week. So I never saw my kid. I have older kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have 2 older kids too, right? But I put my poor daughter, who's my oldest, through the gamut. That poor child had to watch her little brother so often. And I relied a lot on the kids and my husband to like basically take care of their own needs while I was hustling and, you know, pounding the streets. And it was not the kind of thing that I really got as much out of as I thought I was going to. The return.
Yeah.
It definitely did not give me the kind of return I was hoping to get. So in 2018 is when I really stepped back. I had gotten some really great, and when you were one of them, really great, perspectives of what I should do, and what I shouldn't do. And in 2018 was when I really stepped back and said, okay, I am only going to go to those that serve me. I am only going to go to the events that cost money. And I am going to be better about the kind of relationships that I have. Between 18 and 20, I also created a bit of a mastermind group. We got together once a month, and it was all the industries that I work with. I fostered those relationships really well. After the shutdown happened, we kind of dissolved, but the relationships remained up to, you know, even today, where much of my business is referral based. And those referrals are from those relationships that I cemented between 18 and 20. Yeah, there's a lot of people who know me, but I can tell you now that out of the, 5, 6, 7 years, well, you know, really, I was a part of a networking group for 3 years. In those 3 years that I was part of a networking group, I didn't get one singular referral, not one. So that's a huge regret of mine, because it took a lot of me away from my son. Thankfully, he doesn't remember any of it, but you know, he was too little to remember any of it. By the time mommy was back, like he had more conscious, it was more of his conscious memory. but yeah, that's definitely what I regret. And that's why I consistently tell people to be very selective in the groups that you do join or the events that you do attend, and make sure that they serve you.
Yeah, well, I think the misconception is a lot of people feel like they have to be part of a networking group or be in networking events constantly in order to gain sales and new business, or just business in general. And that's just not the truth, right? There are so many ways you can get business, that you can market for new business, so much more creative. And maybe we should make an episode out of that.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a great idea. We should make an episode out of that. So we can talk about all the different ways to really think about, like, it's not just one way. It's not just face-to-face. It's not just referrals. And it's not also just solely like ads either. There's a lot of different avenues now that people can really consider. Even when you're starting a new business, that's low cost. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just your time, because that's all you have as a new business owner, your time. So you just invest your time in it instead of kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall, per se, going to as many networking events as possible, thinking the more people you talk to, the quantity is going to somehow squeeze out quality. And that's, unfortunately, it's just not the truth. So there's your raw truth for the day.
Yeah. And I feel like we did do an episode on that, but it begs to be repeated. I think that we probably have more to offer. I feel like we did it in our first season. But anyway, yeah, we'll definitely talk more about that. And you're right. This is the raw truth. This is where we share our own gritty experience with today's topic. And we do this because we want you guys to know that success isn't easy, and it's not pretty, and it's certainly not a straight line. So from here, we are now going to move on to our famous examples. So in each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful businesses or business owners of today or in history. And sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and have inspired today's discussion.
So part of the reason why I love doing this with you, Savannah, is that you and I both know we actually put a lot of research and time into preparing for each episode, probably way more than we had ever thought was needed. But some of it is also self-driven and self-motivated, because you mentioned this before, and I certainly am repeating the same thing, is I learn a lot when we research for these topics, right? I learn a lot about putting my thoughts together and learning and like exploring just new like software learning. I learned some new software today from you. Just all these new things that I'm learning as we go along. And so one of the things that when I was researching about this, I learned about and I totally fell in love with and got geeked out about was Zapier's story, right? Because I was like, oh, Zapier is such good software. And then I started Googling. It's like, what's the story behind Zapier? So I'm going to link it in the show notes below, and I'm not going to go over the whole story, but it is a very good story, how they bootstrapped, got started. You know, these guys who don't have the quintessential resume as you would expect somebody doing a tech startup, you know, they weren't Ivy League. They got rejected out of Y Combinator the first time. It was great. But anyway, so they were super scrappy, but I thought they made a pretty good example today as far as like when's a good time to invest, especially when it comes to content marketing. So that was one of the topics we had talked about earlier. But with Zapier, when they first started, and Zapier is really not that old, which is kind of funny, because I thought about, oh yeah, that's right. They only started a few years ago, but they're so like, you know, prominent now. So when Zapier was, I guess, younger as a company, they relied really heavily on SEO and co-marketing, really, which is their partnership marketing, to help turn their startup into a real business. But then after 2 years into the business, the company started putting in a lot more effort into their content marketing. And I would like to translate the fact that when they say more effort, they probably start investing money into content marketing. So this is about 2 years into the business. And now, which I think this is a few years in, they have like nearly 250,000 monthly readers of their Zapier blog. Right. So per, I guess, a quote by Wade Foster, which is the founder of Zapier, he said that they felt like they needed to raise the bar. Like, their partnerships were going really well. Their SEO strategy was going really well. But largely, Zapier was somewhat still unknown. And that's so true. Like, it was like a very like hidden gem and secret in the beginning. But it really took them quite a bit of time to kind of be known. And like he said, he's like, you know, if somebody didn't have a need for them, nobody knew that they existed. So they felt like they didn't have the awareness of the company that they wanted or should have had. So they decided to actually put all their resources behind content marketing and getting people to know who they are, so that when they do need the product, it was an easy choice and they kind of kept them top of mind. Right. So what they did was they went and saw what everybody else was doing, what the best people in the space were doing, and pretty much thought they would mimic their style, but in a very Zapier-centric, you know, specific voice, and doing around topics they know would interest their customer. And eventually their blog took shape, and the apps and tools and productivity and all that stuff kind of took off on their blog. He himself admits that it was a lot of effort and it took a lot of time, but it compounded. They said the first 6 months was tough. The next 6 months was a little better. And the last 6 months was pretty great. So if you do the math there, I believe that comes out to be 18 months, right? So remember how we said that content marketing was a long game? This is proof it's a long game.
Yes.
So he says it's really like, content marketing is really like your personal savings, right? You have to keep making small deposits. If you only make one deposit, you're not going to have very good returns. But if you keep making deposits on a consistent basis over time, then you're going to get compound interest and ultimately much bigger rewards.
You ain't wrong. So for me, I had to use two businesses because I'm me. I planned to do one, but I saw this and I thought it's important to know the evolution of Netflix. According to valuer.com, most of us know Netflix as one of the largest online streaming services that sells monthly subscription packs.
Well, when they first started, everybody thought they were bat-ass crazy.
Yes, totally. Most of us do not know that its journey through the business ecosystem was not easy. In the course of 22 years, can you believe Netflix has been around for 22 years? Like, oh, would have never thunk it.
Not to date ourselves, but I'm pretty sure we still remember the days of mailing back and forth that DVD.
I mean, I guess I remember going from Blockbuster to Redbox and from Redbox I guess to Netflix.
Yeah, I don't think I ever got into Redbox, but I remember those little white filmy like DVD cases the things came in.
Yeah.
Little Netflix on it.
Yeah, I thought I had read something about Blockbuster had been offered to buy Netflix and they refused.
Yes, they said no. And now there's a show on Netflix called Blockbuster.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, one season, but whatever.
It's funny. Okay. So anyway, the company underwent multiple strategic corporate development stages in those 22 years. Namely, Netflix started off as an online movie rental service. Like you mentioned, it worked on a traditional pay per rental model. Customers did not need to go to the DVD to get a DVD from the stores anymore. Movies came to them, which took the customer experience to a whole new level. Over time, Netflix reinvented its corporate plan and switched to a subscription-based business model where users could lease a DVD for a monthly fee. At the very peak of the DVD business, Netflix decided to rebrand again and shifted to online streaming. The emerging market allowed them to expand globally. In 2010, the company first began its international expansion to Canada. Today, Netflix is available in over 190 countries. Finally, they started producing original content. As of the third quarter of 2020, Netflix subscribers numbered 195.15 million. Yeah. The rest of the article is going to be linked in our show notes. So now,
crazy. So they have a book. Oh, yeah. I think the one that they have a book out, right? If one of the founders wrote a book about it, because I was listening to some interview and I can't remember the guy's name, but eventually he ended up being one of the founders of Upworks. But before he found Upworks, in between, like, I think he was at a failed startup, like not his startup, but he was part of a startup that failed. So he was kind of in between, and he knew one of the guys from Netflix, and Netflix was starting up, and they had reached out to him and said, "Hey, would you like to join our company?" Who's like five people then, right, doing this thing? And he was like, looking at the model, going, "Yeah, this is never gonna work, right?" Yeah. And so that's one of his anecdotes he talks about now, going, "Oh my gosh, right? If I knew now, like then what I knew now." But he, you know, he's still friends with one of the founders, and he, you know, he's like, the thing is, back in the day, they didn't know where they were going with this. They didn't know what was going to come out of it. So who would have known it would have been such a giant as it is today, right? And they pivoted so well into the online streaming, and certainly into the being a production company now.
Oh, I will totally date myself. The whole TiVo thing was like bizarro to me. I was like, how does this work? What even is this? Right? Like, but then I feel like I got Netflix in 2015, 16, somewhere around there. And I don't watch regular television at all. I only watch.
Oh, I don't streaming. Even have, access.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't watch regular television. Like, it's insane. It's insane what they created. They really were trailblazers in that, because now there's all these other things, right? Like Amazon, HBO Max, Paramount Plus, and like all of that other stuff. Like, totally disrupted the industry. So my second is Marjorie Merriweather Post, who I'm sure you've heard of before. Mm-hmm. She's top of mind for me right now because I went to her beautiful Hillwood estate last weekend, and I was reminded of what a disruptor this woman truly was. Like, she's an OG disruptor. So Post was the only child of Charles William Post. Although he was known for Post cereal, he essentially stole that idea from Kellogg when he spent time at his sanitarium in Michigan. Postum Cereal Company was hugely successful and deserves airtime on its own for his incredible marketing, because he did something like really revolutionary, which was free samples. Believe it or not. But this is about Marjorie, who inherited the company when her father died. It was Marjorie's idea. And mind you, everyone railed against her to change Post Cereal, or rather the Postum company, to because, you know, originally its focus was on cereal and breakfast products, to General Foods. General Foods allowed them to acquire companies that didn't have to do with cereal. And most of them we still use today. Her two biggest purchases were Jell-O and Bird's Eye. And the story about Bird's Eye is also truly fascinating. Marjorie was a trailblazer, and she was an incredible businesswoman. Although the company was pretty successful when she inherited it, it hit the stratosphere with her at the helm. There's a wonderful article that gives you a brief introduction to her incredible life that also includes the Bird's Eye story, a truncated version of the Bird's Eye story, and her father's story. It'll be linked below. And if you can, search for her on History Chicks podcast, where I first learned about her amazing journey quite a while ago. She's incredible. What she did for our current lives and for women, you know, a lot of her focus was on how to make the lives of the woman easier. So
remind me again, what decade was she kind of prominent in?
The 20th century.
Wow.
20th century.
She is really the OG.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She was married quite a few times. But she discovered Bird's Eye when she was married, I think, to her second husband. She was also married to E.F. Hutton at one time. She died in 1973, I believe. You'll have to look that up.
Wow.
But yeah, but she had a phenomenal life. And she also has, which is the reason why I wanted to go to Hillwood, she has one of the largest private collections of Russian 19th and 18th century art, and her French collection is insane. So
I love how you love history.
I know. So with each episode, we like to share either books, tools, apps, platforms, or anything we think is a great next step and connector to our discussion. So if you like our subject matter and want to learn more, you'll have a great place to start.
So mine's pretty simple. It's going to be in the form of a couple links that we'll drop in the show notes. But since essentially, I kind of vetted a couple lists that I found online of just really great software recommendations for small businesses to use and consider, and you know, just the variety of costs that it comes with. And of course, you know now that you can probably use Zapier to connect any of them. But I figured that would probably be kind of like my recommendations. Just having kind of an all-in-one list. Being able to choose what works for you.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that some of the things that I'm going to mention are on that list. So I mentioned Google Workspace and Notion, QuickBooks, and it's not a podcast with me in it if I don't say Process Street. Take advantage of your...
One day they will hear us.
Take advantage of your local county's SBA. See what kind of offers they may have for workshops and programs. For example, in Fairfax County, we have the Community Business Partnership, as you had mentioned, and it's an excellent program for new and growing businesses. You don't necessarily have to take advantage of their mentorship, but they do have some great workshops and programs and things like that that you could take advantage of. Use Expensify to track your miles and expenses. Take advantage of your neighborhood for admin or just assistance in general. See if there are any companies in your realm that would like to do cross-marketing. Or if you rely on social media, use Hootsuite or Buffer to schedule for you. MailChimp is awesome as well. And their free version gives you a lot of options. And I just love Canva. It gives you a lot of free options too.
Oh my gosh. Yes, Canva makes me look so good all the time. People are like, "You're so creative. How do you make all this?" And I was like, "Not without Canva, I can't make this."
totally. It's so easy to use, and their free options are just like you don't have to buy.
It's a great way to make your own marketing collateral. A lot of your own marketing collateral.
Absolutely.
Most of all of mine comes out of Canva. You don't have to be an artsy person at all. They take away a lot of the difficult, challenging of like matching colors and styles and stuff. Like it's all kind of done for you. And I think I'm so glad you bought that up. I just used it last week. I completely forgot about that.
I love Canva. And just, I mean, there are a lot of options. So we are on LinkedIn. We are on Instagram. You can continue this conversation with us. You could always email us and, of course, support us on Patreon as well. As Tiffany had mentioned and I mentioned earlier, we do spend a lot of time on procuring and curating this content for you. And there's so many more things that we want to do, but you know, frankly, it costs a lot of money, but we want to do this for you. So, if you want us to
feeling generous, that'll be great.
Yeah, if you want to be generous, and you know, we would love to give you the opportunity of a sponsorship, an opportunity for commercial space, or you know, anything else. We'd love to talk with you. So please reach out to us.
Especially for our upcoming in-person event in Tyson's Corner, Tyson's, Virginia, pretty much. Yes. I think it's probably largely going to be around this area too. Like we do expect a in-person crowd to be here, just kind of pulling on both you and I's own network, which our network is pretty big around here, just from the years we've been in business, and then just also the wonderful help of friends, business friends that we have. But so if anybody's interested in sponsorships for that actually live event, definitely let us know now so we can work it in, because we're, you know, me and Savannah, we like to plan ahead of time. So naturally, we're already planning now for what's going to occur in May.
Absolutely. So, and in the meantime, join us for our next episode where we're going to discuss business plans. Should you have one or not? Please show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and YouTube. We'd love for you to also share our episodes. All of our links are posted below. Until next time, mind the business behind your business, because all great successes start small.
Bye.
All right.